Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. And welcome back to Divine Intervention. Today we are trying not one, but two, hopefully excellent wines from the Cape. We will be the judges of that. At least they should survive, because they are from a producer called Survivor, with something that looks vaguely cattle-like on the label. But what do I know about these things? The man who has chosen them for us, as always, is our food and wine expert in Cape Town, Michael Olivier. Michael, welcome back.
John, thank you. Thank you, thank you.
Well, thank you for choosing stuff with such pretty labels. Let's hope the contents are as pretty. And with me in the studio for the second week in a row, we are delighted to welcome back our Cape wine master extraordinaire, Jenny Ratcliffe Wright from the Warwick dynasty. We welcome Jeremy Sampson, who's the father of a dynasty in his own right. And we have Malcolm MacDonald, who is not only a fine palate, but also a great bloke, and the chap who's responsible for the technical side of these podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Hi, John. Hi,
thank
John.
You.
Okay, Michael, moving swiftly on, the first wine I can tell through my great experience and research is a white wine. Tell us about it.
Yep. Good. Well, it's called Survivor. It's a Chenin Blanc. The grapes come from a single vineyard in the Swartland, interesting enough, from a farm called Constantia. And they're taken to the Overhex Winery, which is on the road between Worcester and Robertson. So here we have a wine that is a 4.5 platter star wine. It's made up of free run juice, 30% of which was fermented in stainless steel tanks, and then the balance went into French oak barrels, untoasted, 500 litre barrels. And interestingly enough, they rolled the barrels every day during fermentation just to mix things up and to get more lees contact. And then after the fermentation, the wine spent about 4 months or so in barrel before being blended. I think that the barrel fermentation certainly supports the wonderful fruit in this wine. I really, really like this wine. There's the sort of the classical Chenin stuff going on there, guava, tropical fruit. There's quite a lot of apricot and peach there, that nice sort of ripe, white-fleshed peach. The oak, I think, is really well integrated, nice long finish with a sort of little lime squirt right at the end.
Well, I really am enjoying it. As we've discussed often, Michael, Chenin Blanc, or Chenin Blanc as we call it in South Africa, is, I think, the most planted grape. Certainly it has been in the past. It's often looked down upon, maybe because of historical Planck-like characteristics, but there's nothing Planck-like in this wine. It is absolutely gorgeous. It's a great credit to South Africa, and I am enjoying it thoroughly. Jeremy.
John, as you know, Chenin is one of my favourite areas, and I think this wine illustrates the need to explore, because I've never heard of Survivor, never heard of it in any way before, but it's one of those things people must put on their lists. You know, if the Chenin grapes coming from Swartland, that already has got a fantastic pedigree, being made in the Worcester area, and to me, some of the best wine at the moment is being made in the Worcester area. The Aldis and people like that, it's quite incredible how the area, and all these new areas are producing fantastic wines. It's getting a bit scary. It's not just Stellenbosch or Constantia or Franschhoek, all these new areas producing wonderful, wonderful wines.
I don't think it's scary, I think it's wonderful. But obviously for people who are boring and set in their ways, it must be difficult. I know you're not, Jeremy. Our Cape wine master, Jenny, what do you make of it?
Well, before I talk about this delicious wine, I'd just like to have a second on Chenin in general, is that, yes, it is the most widely planted, but we should really delete that fact, because, as you correctly said, it makes it sort of a little bit too mainstream. The thing with Shannon that can be tricky is that you can either get something as delicious as this that's oaked and very serious, or you can get something made by a cooperative at 22 rand a bottle that's not serious or delicious. And so it's very polarized. Sauvignon Blanc is always pretty standard. It's the quality varies slightly, but it's pretty standard. Chenin can be anything. I like the style of Chenin as opposed to the unwooded fruity style. I think their use of oak is unbelievably clever. They've got very technical tasting notes, and one thing I really liked was they told you the size of the barrel, which obviously makes a big difference. It's a 500-liter barrel, which creates that it doesn't over-oak it. Your ratio of oak to fruit is so much better, and you can taste it in this wine. It's cleverly done, and it's really going to be a great ambassador for Chenin in South Africa.
Well, something you've succeeded in doing, Jenny, that I didn't, was to detect the oak, because as you say, it's very subtle. It's very, very well balanced. It's a beautifully put together wine, but maybe that's what gives it an extra bit of complexity and interest. Certainly, this is a wonderful food wine. But once again, as with the wine we tried last week from Constantia, it's something that I could happily drink by the bottle on a warm day, as long as the bottle is nicely chilled. Malcolm McDonald.
Also, very, very nice. I'd enjoy that with probably some sushi or some lighter seafood. But just a hint of acidity around the edges, quite nice and refreshing. I'm really enjoying this. You know, much as I'm not someone who tends to drink white wine, I quite enjoyed the last few that we've had.
Well, when it comes to our white survivor, the tribe has spoken, and the tribe seems to like it quite a lot. But can this consistency really permeate the next wine, which, once again, my scientific research tells me is red? What is it, Michael?
John, it's the Survivor Pinotage from the 2014 vintage, also from the Swartland, from a farm called Constantia, owned by D.B. Rist. And here you have a grape that's been taken from the Swartland to Overhex Winery, and the wine has been made there. Cold-soaked, and then fermented, and then malolactic fermentation in 300-litre first fill medium toast French barrels, where it stayed for 18 months. And I really like this. I think this is a big wine. I love the fruit. The fruit is sort of sappy and upfront and well supported by the oak. There's quite a lot of blood plum there as well. And then it's nice sort of what I like to call sort of frivolous, happy fruit, like cherries and raspberries there as well, which just sort of add to the interest of the wine. Nice spice, nicely integrated tannins on the aftertaste as well, which is sort of long and gently waning.
Michael, I'm a little bit worried with this wine. I find it just a little bit too stark and austere. It could be because we're drinking it a bit young. Would this be better in a few years' time, or am I just being difficult as usual?
No, I don't think so. I think obviously a wine like this, which has been seriously made and seriously elevated in the cellar, will improve hugely with being laid down. It's after all only 2 years old, and I think if you give it another couple of years, it'd really be good.
Malcolm,
I'm enjoying that. I agree that maybe it would settle and smooth a little bit with a couple of years, but plenty of lovely flavours. I like the spice in it, and I certainly could drink that, but I think I'd let it settle for a few years.
Jenny?
I think most Pinotages, classic Pinotages, which this is, have a little bit of a love-hate in them. There's a little bit of stop it, I like it, and which is, I think, exactly what you're describing. It's Malcolm saying it's tasty and it's delicious and that he likes the spice, but there's a hint of stop, maybe not quite yet, and that is Pinotage, and it's a little bit of the dark horse in of all the grapes. I think one of the best things that I read on their tasting notes is that their food pairings, sweet barbecue ribs, they would be delicious with this wine because you've got that sweetness, you've got that charriness, and the, I think that that would exactly bring out the flavours in this wine.
I must say I agree. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I would happily drink it. I'm just wondering whether it might be one for cellaring, just to see. Jeremy?
Yes, I get the plums and the damsons and cherries.
Grapes?
It is a little bit different. Yes, there's a hint of grape in that somewhere. I think, as we're saying, not quite sure about this one. I think age might sort out some of the wrinkles in it. But it's still a very, very interesting wine. But a question for you, Michael. What are the sort of prices that these two wines are going for retail? Because Pinotage prices seem to go all over the place at the moment.
Yeah, they do. Unfortunately, I don't actually know what they're sold for. But I would think that they're, you know, they're sort of medium-priced wines.
Look it up on your phone, Jeremy, once we've concluded this. And Michael, I have a question for you, grasping the nettle back from our impetuous Mr. Sampson. We've heard sticky ribs. What would you serve with this wine?
Look, I think one of the things that we're onto in quite a big way at the moment is I've been playing around with making what I like to think of as a gin and barbecue sauce. And I think that I succeeded in finding the final recipe. And one of the things that it goes really well with is a roast boned loin of pork, where you can give the crackling up wonderfully, cook it long and slow, and then serve it with this barbecue sauce, and the Pinotage would be a perfect counterpoint to that. Steak as well. I don't think it would take a Bernays type of sauce with a steak, maybe mushrooms or something like that. And of course, I think it's a great sort of dry wine. You know, if you can get a really nice pork sausage or something, it would be just great.
Michael, can I just check what you just said? Did you say gin and barbecue sauce?
No.
Oh, all right. I'm going deaf again. So what do you put in your barbecue sauce? Just usual stuff, a bottle of tomato ketchup and a few herbs.
Absolutely. No, it's quite a complicated combination of all sorts of things, and it's got a bit of smoked paprika, and it's really mainly tomato-based with a whole lot of seasonings in it. But if you like, I'll send the recipe to you.
Well, I tell you what, Michael, I know a lot of our listeners come to these podcasts through your website. Maybe you could post it there, even as part of a full meal with a tasting for one of the wines you think will go well with it.
Yeah, it is my intention to post it.
Excellent. Will you have your homework now?
Yes.
And thanks for introducing us to both these wines. We didn't really go into great detail on what you might drink with a Chenin Blanc, or even eat with the Chenin Blanc. I suppose you drink more Chenin Blanc with the Chenin Blanc. What would you eat, Michael?
I'm a great believer in chicken and Chenin going together really well. And if you get just mildly classy and take some goat cheese and butter and thyme maybe, and then just lift the skin off the breast of your chicken and off the top of the legs, and then massage that mixture in there, obviously with some salt and some grindy pepper, and then put lots of butter on the breast, and again cook it long and slow. We are seriously into long and slow because it leaves you with such a wonderfully juicy product at the end. I think that would be a great mix.
And presumably you slaughtered the chicken first.
One does. Okay. Or somebody else does.
Jenny, food with this wine?
With the Chenin, I'd like a camembert cheese. Maybe with a sort of slightly savoury preserve, maybe something with a little bit of ginger. Cheese, I like the goat's cheese and chicken, I think that would work. But great wines sometimes are best with very simple food.
Yeah, absolutely.
A pizza or a salad or just a friend. Like, it doesn't need a whole lot to really come alive. Whereas I think this Pinotage might need a bit of food to settle those tannins a bit.
Yeah.
And what temperature would you cook this friend? Jeremy, final thought?
I think with the Chenin, I'd like some Gurnow. Gurnow and perhaps mashed potatoes with some chives in there and things like that. Final thought on this? I think the jury's out. Just looking at my colleagues' glasses at the moment, people are still savouring or thinking about it. They're not draining their glasses. And I guess that's the acid test.
Acid? Well, it's not that acidic, Jeremy. It's wine, and it's nice wine. Well, once again, we are trundling towards the end of another podcast tasting. Many thanks to Michael Olivier for choosing two wines from Survivor, one of which survived very well, the other one of which, as you say, didn't go down quite as well, but I would love to return to it in a few years' time and see if it's a few of the rougher edges have been sandpapered down by time. What a beautiful phrase. Michael Olivier, as always, it's been a privilege and a delight to chat to you. Thank you very much indeed for selecting the wine, talking us through it, and being a jolly good sport.
Thanks, John.
And to our Joburg studio audience, Jenny Ratcliffe Wright. Do people have trouble after the first 10 bottles pronouncing your name? Someone who comes from a wine dynasty and has double barrels in her name. I think that's very appropriate. Jeremy Sampson, thanks for joining us, as always. And last, not least at all, our technical guru and nice bloke, Malcolm McDonald.
Thanks, John.
I'm John Fraser. That was Divine Intervention.